Hi, and welcome to another Wardens of the Midwest podcast. I'm Mickey.
I am Joe from Cincinnati.
I'm Matthew from the previous one where I replaced Joe.
My name is Fist Whiskers.
I have nothing to say to that. I am Mike.
And yeah, we're just getting back from last week where we've had a regional since then. We've had the release of the Stark Box. And one of the things that came up is that a lot of players out there see all these Stark cards and they're like, what am I supposed to do with all these Stark cards? So we've brought our resident Stark expert, Matt, here today to sit and talk with us about how to build a Stark deck.
Yeah, I saw someone posted on Facebook and it was like three of the new Caitlyn, three of the new Eddard, three of the new Blackfish, and then like, you know, three of Rob, two Grey Wind, two Wolves of the North. I was like, that is way too much gold in one deck.
Yeah, how do you afford all of that?
you don't. And the glory of it, though, is that with all the new cards, you don't have to. That's kind of the point. Like, you can diversify your gold a little bit. You actually play 0/7 cost characters. So.
Yeah, well, you know, with core Caitlyn, there's no... It's really hard to justify the new Caitlyn.
Oh, absolutely. The new Caitlyn is a good card, but old Caitlyn is the only one that does what she does, and she does it very, very well.
Old Caitlyn is spectacular. Yeah. I would not advise switching out for the new one.
She's also more stat efficient as well, being a 4 cost for 4, whereas the new one is baseline 5 strength for 7. So.
Yeah. And honestly, if the new Caitlyn had a different name, I think that she would see a lot of play, but...
Well,
it's just not
you keep
worth
calling her Caitlyn, but her name's actually Catelyn, so she does have a different name.
See, I speak English, or American, I suppose, and when there's one consonant between two vowels, the first one's long, so I don't care if people call her Catelyn. It's pronounced Caitlyn.
Grammar major.
Matt, you're the Stark expert here.
Can I see the card?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I call her Catelyn just because that's what I've been told she's called. Like,
yeah, there's a
neither. It's neither here nor there. I have a weird name. Like, my name is Matthew with one T, so I kind of get the weird names thing. It doesn't really matter. Personally, I find that your personal preference to your own name is more important than what other people think of it. But that is way tangential.
I think that's kind of what we do here, though.
We try to avoid doing that. We don't want to talk about what we had for breakfast.
Oh no, we don't go that far. But we'll have an agenda, and we'll say like we want to talk about melee this week, and then we talk about.
We don't ever want to talk about
like
melee.
We waste that entire episode not talking about melee.
Hey,
so.
I was a part of that episode, and I disagree. I think we were pretty topical for the melee thing, and then
I'm talking about the episode previous to that when I said like, and we're going to talk about melee. Then we never did. So.
Okay.
We get off on tangents in this podcast. So, anyway, so like Mickey said, we're gonna build a Stark deck today, and I think it's most appropriate that we do Stark Fealty because I think everyone wants to run as many of these Stark cards as possible. So,
I also think for the most part that Fealty for Stark is probably best, just because they do have a lot of cards that synergize within Stark. They don't have a whole lot of stuff that can be used generically with other factions. I could be wrong. I haven't done a whole lot of testing with non-Fealty yet, but I like Fealty personally. Well, they also introduced a lot of really good loyal cards, so it makes a little bit more use of Fealty, which was a problem previously.
Well, I feel like Stark's a lot like Night's Watch in that some of their cards might not be loyal, but they are basically loyal.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry, I had an example. No, I don't remember what it was.
Well, just things like interactions between.
So, for instance, Jory is actually one of the cards that like I wish he was loyal, but he's not. He only works on Stark characters, but he's not loyal for some reason.
Yeah, and then there's like the Kennel Master is not loyal, but not many people have direwolves other than Stark, and then there's one in Night's Watch. So.
Yeah.
One of the things about the box is I don't know if this was mentioned because I was out for a second, but none of the other faction cards are loyal either, and there's only just a few Stark. Few Stark cards are loyal, but what I found really strange was, like, with every other faction that's being represented, nothing is loyal.
Yeah, and they actually did that on purpose. In the article where they released the box, they actually explicitly said that all non-Stark cards are non-loyal so that, ostensibly, you could play them in Stark.
Wow.
Not necessarily that they fit there.
Theoretically.
But the intent was that you could play all these new cards in a Stark deck, regardless of whether or not it was a Stark card.
All right.
Which I disagree that most of the non-Stark cards are Not particularly good for Stark in particular, but...
or not particularly good at all. That Lannister are, character.
Yeah, some of them are not good.
Look into
some
the viper
them,
eyes of my wolf.
I underestimated the five-cost knight out of Tyrell, actually, is really good. That card I underestimated. I said it was a below-average card to bad, and I've actually found through playing against it a few times that it's actually a pretty good card.
And one of the things to really consider about that new Tyrell knight is that in the event of a tie, the player who owns it picks. It's not like Queen's Assassin, where it absolutely has to be the highest or the lowest. There can be ties in that. And I know there's been a lot of people debating that back and forth, but I mean, my advice to them is, you know, read the card.
Yeah. I think everyone would do better if they just read cards a little more
this
often.
This is true.
That new Quentin is awfully nice, though. I'll say that. He'll see play for a long time.
Well, my second deck, my first deck is Night's Watch, obviously. My second deck is Martell, Banner of the Watch. And
you don't say.
And Quentin is really nice to kill on Wildfire, so like if you can kill Benjen and Quentin on the same turn, you can get 2 power from Benjen, and then you can kill a 4-5 strength character on their side after they pick their 3. So they'd pick their 3, and then Quentin dies, and then you pick another one to kill.
Is that really a very Nedley deck, though, Joe? They're on opposite sides of the country.
You know, the Sand Snakes like to go skiing, ass. And I already said, like, I don't play it in competitive sense. I just like playing it because Gaston Grey and Boneway are so fucking good. You heard me. I know. I see that look.
Nope. I have nothing
I
to
see
say.
That look.
I don't know. The Martell card that I like more, like, he is a very good card, but I actually like the Viper's Eyes. But,
that card is really so good. I was reading the card game DB reviews for it, and I was on the Stark cards. I was reviewing the Stark cards, and then a couple other people were reviewing the non-Stark cards. And, like, all of them talked about, like, oh, it sucks because Martell wants to be second player, but then you have to be first player in order to take a put to the sword out of their hand before they can use it. And I was like, that is so not the point.
Yeah, no, they totally missed the point on that one. I only read the Stark card review because, you know,
you're a Stark player.
I'm the Stark player, so I didn't really much care for the non-Stark cards. I did read them and evaluate them in my own right, but I didn't pay too much attention to the evaluation of the other people. But, you know, I like that card a ton.
Like,
it's pretty good.
I'll say one thing about his Viper Eyes. Not only can you just do it whenever you lose a challenge, which you're going to lose a power challenge at some point in the game, but you can do it after you Gaston Grey summon into their hand. It gets rid of all the dupes, and then they only have 1 left, and then you look at their hand and discard it.
But you can just save Gaston Grey, can't you?
No, it's not saveable?
I've not played against that enough.
If you have a 3-dupe Dany, and I send it back to your hand, and then his Viper Eyes, I can
discard
the 3rd.
I think that was a mistake
on
the Targaryen player's part, that if they included a 3-dupe dude or 2-dupe dude into a challenge. But
well, they have to, right? I mean, Gaston Grey, you can't just not attack. You have to
You can't ignore it.
You just have to let it trigger with your double dupe Dany.
No, you just have to take the bait at some point. You have to accept that you're going to get Gaston Greyed and just deal with it.
Well, now what you
it's
have
like
to do,
Dracarys. I mean, you can't just not make challenges against a Targ player if you know they have Dracarys in their hand.
Well, what you need to do is you need to trigger their Gaston Grey on an intrigue challenge so they cannot his Viperize you.
That's one way to do it. Or you can trigger with Catelyn and then it doesn't matter.
That's true. But Caitlyn is so damn good. It's crazy. Caitlyn.
Who?
Caitlyn.
All right, I think we were trying to build a Stark deck.
I think that was
this
the point.
Point
yeah,
the,
I think
the
that,
new
was, that was pretty much the point. That's why I'm here, at least.
Yeah, so I'm going to... Why don't we just let Matt do his thing? You want to start with characters or plots?
I kind of like to start with plots. Something that I've said since the beginning of the game is that a good plot deck is probably more important than a good main deck.
Oh, yeah, the trickiest thing is always to build the plot deck.
So, like, even if your main deck is good, but you have subpar plots, then it doesn't really matter.
Fair enough.
So, my plot deck has not changed a terrible amount with the new stuff. It has introduced 2 new plots that I really like for the deck. The first is A Time for Wolves. It's just a super good plot for the most part.
Would you say it's super duper good?
No, I wouldn't say that. No. It's just a good plot. It's basically a 6-gold plot if you utilize it for the full gold value, but it just enables some things that are pretty good interactions. Like if a character just died or you had to sacrifice them for something, and you need them back, and there's a relatively low strength character, you can just immediately fetch Summer with it and then pay 3 gold for that character again. So that's a pretty good interaction. Yeah, it can go get Nymeria and immediately put it on a dude, and Nymeria is one of the best cards in the new set. So that's a, like, a lot of the times if I've got a unique start character out on setup, my first plot will be like a Time for Wolves, get Nymeria out, and then maybe a smaller guy to help my bigger dudes out.
Now, do you ever see yourself getting Grey Wind or Wolves of the North with it? I mean, it's a 3 gold plot. You couldn't really play it unless you had additional economy that turn.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. There have been games where, like, I drew the cheaper Wolves already. Like, I already have Nymeria on the table or Lady. And, like, either Summer doesn't do me any good, or I have the additional economy to get Grey Wind or Wolves of the North, and they're useful that turn.
Yeah.
I wouldn't play it unless I could. I wouldn't go get a card that doesn't immediately interplay unless I can get a use out of it by playing it as my marshalling.
Yeah. All right, fair enough. So, obviously, one or two?
Just one. It's unfortunately, with its initiative, it's not good enough as a two of. If it had maybe five initiative, you could probably play two of it. Even then, I would say that's probably risky with the low number of good wolves to get. Like, obviously, you've got pups and shaggy dogs as backups to the good wolves. Yeah. I mean, they're both decent, but as it stands, it's the reason I played on turn one is because a lot of the times, turn one is the only turn that I don't particularly want to go. Like, it's not that I don't want to go first, but it's one of the only turns where I'm like, it's okay if I go second. But, like, the deck wants to go first a lot just because the way I play the deck, it wants to just, it wants you to respond to my challenges, not the other way around for the most part. So I make you make the decisions that you need to make before I have to worry about it.
See, that's funny because I think the exact opposite way. I'm like, I'd rather see what you're doing before I decide what I want to do.
That's because you're Night's Watch.
Yeah, you play some silly deck, so.
I play silly decks, okay.
And it comes in handy every once in a while, even outside of Night's Watch. Just like if you have a Milk in hand and they have no good targets, maybe you go second. But you really need to be ready to get boned in the challenges phase if you do something like that.
But you have Maester Haemon.
Oh, honestly, most of the decks I build, I don't care if I go first or second. You know, say that. no, I really don't. I want to see what my opponent's going to do. I mean, think about like Lannister. They don't care if they go first or second. The only reason they would care is to trigger the gold off Tyrion.
Yeah, I mean,
or like Baratheon. I don't play Baratheon, but like you're screwed either way. I mean, if you go first against Baratheon, then you put all your guys out, and all of a sudden they kneel him with Mel and nonsense. Yeah. And if you go second, then Robert intimidates everyone into kneeling.
Yeah,
and
Baratheon's an interesting one, but I think Martell definitely wants to go second. We're getting off topic again.
Yeah. So, the only other plot from the new set that I have in currently, there are a couple that I want to do some experimentation with, like the new winter plot that says each player removes one power from a card, but it's 4 gold with 2 claim. I kind of want to try that one, but it has the problem of just having really low initiative, but it does have decent gold for a 2-claim plot.
It has low reserve, too, though. That's a big issue with it, because a lot of people are saying, like, it'd be a good turn one, because it's like a sneak attack with one less gold, except you can do all the challenges you want, and then you might not be able to go first, but who cares? But then it has full reserve, so you can't really do it turn one.
Well, so reserve value is something that kind of touches upon what I said in the previous time I was on, the difference between card advantage and card draw. One of the reasons this game's card advantage doesn't matter as much as reserve value. So, like, if you're actually trying to meet your reserve value, then you're going to, like, you don't want to draw cards. But card draw is important. You're just going to take a sacrifice on your card advantage by discarding those cards at the end of your turn if they're not discarded anyway. My reserve is an average of 5 with a couple 6s and a 7. Going to the 7 is the only other plot from the new set that I actually have currently in my deck, which is Fallen from Favor.
Yeah.
Just because its gold value and initiative are amazing, I usually find that I do have a sacrificable character in play. Maybe not always good, but it's there. The other thing is, it is a way to trigger Rob during marshalling, which can be relevant against Baratheons specifically. Not that I think they're terribly popular right now. I'm not sure, but it did come up once in the testing games. I'm like, oh, wow, that's really good.
Yeah. And then you can obviously do Catelyn if you actually run her.
If you actually run 7-cost Catelyn, yes, you can do that. But there are also other niche things that you can do with sacrificing characters in Stark that are less paid attention to than the sacrifice thing that I think. Like, for instance, Arya and Summer I find to be very sacrificable characters, especially. So, like, if I plan on needing to sacrifice a character in the next turn, I will gladly take Arya's dupe as my claim and then sacrifice her the preceding turn with either March to the Wall or Fallen from Favor because she's no longer useful to me as a two-strength stealth power
Monocron.
Guy.
Yeah.
So, like, it's like, okay, I'll just sacrifice her, and then when I draw into another one, or then I can time for wolves and play Summer and Ahri in the same turn after that.
Yeah.
So it's a little give and take there.
I think that plot is definitely best for Stark because they do have things like that. I'm not sure how many decks would want to run that.
Yeah, though. It's definitely a niche plot. I don't see it seeing play in a lot of other decks because they don't have as much stuff that either they benefit from or that they can just afford to lose.
Oh, I think the gold value is... It's not a kingdom or an edict, is it?
It is an edict.
Ooh, it is an edict.
That sucks.
Even so, the gold value, I mean, it's the same as noble cause.
When do you think they're going to print a economy plot that's not hit by naval superiority?
They're not.
I think that's the whole point, Joe. It's called balance. I don't find naval superiority to be particularly...
I can't remember the exact text on Needle. Does that save from Fall
it
from
does,
Favor?
It does, yeah. If you've got Needle on somebody, you can save them from falling from favor. I do run 2 Needle in the deck, mostly because of the instances where sacrificing a character, if I have to do it, I can sacrifice that character to regain the card if I need to.
Yeah.
But even then, I don't particularly care for the second half of Needle. I like the fact that it's a 1 gold attachment that gives my guys plus 2 strength.
A 1 gold for 2 strength. It's
nice. Just a really efficient attachment. It helps with the Greyjoy stuff running around, and it also just helps that your dudes are just bigger, so
it protects Blackfish from Dracarys.
Actually, speaking of Blackfish, how do you feel about Blackfish?
Blackfish is amazing. So before Blackfish came out, I was actually running Roderick to kind of diversify my pool of expensive dudes, because when you're running like 3 copies of Rob, although he's very good, you run the risk of like him dying somehow and then having 2 dead cards in your deck. Right now, I'm running 3 different 6-cost dudes, but all at 2 each. Blackfish is one of those because he's basically a pure upgrade to Roderick.
I think he just completely replaced Roderick, like, entirely. Yeah.
So, like, there are a few things that Blackfish have over Roderick, the first of which is he has Renown, which is pretty big on a big character. It also gives the deck 3 Renown characters, which is really nice. The second part is his card draw is less conditional than Roderick's. It's just when you win a military challenge and you draw 1 card. Whereas Roderick had kind of the problem where, like, I don't really want to include another unique dude on this challenge, but I kind of want to get the card draw in. So you're kind of debating, like, how much do I commit to this to draw how many cards and how worth it is that. Whereas, like, Blackfish is just like, oh, I just won a military challenge. I'll draw a card now. And you can either be saved for defense or done with a power challenge, things like that.
Yeah, so let's
also, Blackfish has the added component where he can equip the wolves where Roderick cannot do any attachments besides weapons, which is a big difference.
I forgot
key points of the Blackfish are the Renown and the card draw. The House Tully thing when he gets 4 power on him, that's unlikely to trigger.
It's fancy, but it's not really necessary.
For those that don't know, he's basically a reprint of an old 1.0 card. And even at 3 power, it only took 3 power before he had to activate all the Tully characters. Even then, it didn't happen very often.
Yeah,
4 power on him with this version to before the Tullys don't kneel. That's really unlikely.
Yeah, Eddard helps.
Yeah, Eddard does help. If you've got him and Eddard out, chances are you'll make it there. But something you'll notice about this deck in particular is it only has 2 Tully cards in it. It's Blackfish and Catelyn. You can throw in Tumblestone Knights. They're definitely a good card. But currently, the only ones I have are Catelyn and Blackfish. So not only is it almost never going to come up, it's also not that important. I think that if you're looking to pull that flashy effect off, the best way to do it is by bannering Tyrell for Lady Sansa's Rose. Yeah. Pretty much it.
But having Nymeria on him and him just doing two Nymeria attacks would be nice.
All right. So back to the rest of my plots. Wardens of the North is just a super efficient plot. It's 5 gold, 5 initiative, and just with a super good ability. Just being able to, I've got 5 guys. I will commit one of them to this attack, and then you have to decide how much it is worth it to you to commit how much stuff.
Yeah, it also brings Caitlyn into a put to the sword or ice attack.
Mm-hmm. So they can't stop it.
It does all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, it's just a super good plot. If you're running Stark, you're running... If I could, I would run 7 of that plot. It is just amazing.
Wow.
Maybe not 7, maybe 5, but point made, it is, in my opinion, one of the best plots in the game, right, easily.
And then standard?
Yeah, from there, it's just kind of the standard suite I've been running for a very long time. March to the Wall, it's the first time my Stark deck has not had 2 of it, mostly just because I've got better options at this point. There's one modification where I might change trading with a Bentoshi for something else. I still need to fudge around with the gold a little bit, but the last few times I played, I haven't found that I needed the gold enough to do trading with the Bentoshi. But, like I said, it's something I'm still kind of working on. Gold balance is a very interesting thing in this game. And then I've got 1 confiscation, just because sometimes there are attachments you have to kill. And there are a lot of them in, like, Martell, and then, like, fishing nets, pretty annoying. The new Night's Watch one I could see being a little annoying.
Craven.
Craven. You so, Craven.
That's not out yet, is it?
No, it's not.
It's in the second cycle.
Yeah, it's coming out eventually.
It'll be good.
It's just like, I find that 1 confiscation is pretty good. I've seen a lot of people cut it from their plot list.
It's coming. It's going to be great. Just wait.
Just like winter.
But I think it's good. And then I run sneak attack, just because there are turns where I need to guarantee that I'm going first. At least I feel that way. And it having 2 claim is just super good a lot of the time.
I think Stark is one of the last factions that actually can run sneak attack, just because they have winter is coming. I think it's been replaced in just about every other deck. Like, you know, obviously Greyjoy was running it, but now they have the Rise of the Kraken. Mm-hmm. So I think sneak attack is we're not interested, Danny. But you know, I think
we are. Danny doesn't talk enough. Stuck. Danny, what do you have to say?
I really don't like Rise of the Kraken just because of the gold cost.
Yeah, but it's a closer.
I know.
It's a win more card, really.
Yeah, it really is just a win more card, in my opinion.
But anyway.
But it's a great win more card.
But yeah, so that's my basic plot lineup. One of the reasons I found that I don't really need the gold, even though I'm running a pretty heavy, maybe not pretty heavy, but a kind of heavy deck as far as gold goes, is just like a lot of the plots are super efficient. So like Sneak Attack is 5, Wardens of the North is 5, Fallen from Favor is 7, and March to the Wall is 4. And I... Fealty hits a lot more of my cards than it did before, so
yeah.
It's kind of like, it's okay. I've actually played 1 game where I did not see a single reducing location. I saw my stewards, but that was it, and I was still able to play every character I drew, so.
You don't run Cowering Coppers?
No.
Huh.
I mean, he's got the Blackfish.
Counting Coppers suffers from 2 things in this deck. It's gold and initiative. If I were to run a plot with that low gold and initiative, it could ruin me that turn. Like,
well, Counting Coppers is strictly for the next turn.
Exactly. Right? And this deck doesn't really have, in my opinion, the way I play it, it doesn't have the luxury to wait a turn. If it stumbles a turn because it either doesn't have enough gold or it doesn't get to choose whether or not to go first or second, 90% of the time it wants to go first, it kind of hits a point where it just kind of like, I lost so much that turn, I need to work twice as hard as I would have had to had I not played that plot. Yeah. So, like, the 3 cards are nice, but it doesn't make up for the tempo hit that it generates. So
then let's get to characters, then. Arya, which one are you running?
Actually, I have a question mm-hmm. about the deck real quick. Then.
Yeah.
How do you feel about... It seems like you just have to keep building on that tempo and building and building and building. So the one turn where you can't get through your opponent or your opponent marshals way more, you know, actually gets a field of guys out there, do you feel like you can come back from that? Or is it a kind of glass cannon-y thing where if you're not able to keep you know, pushing and pushing and pushing on them, are you just done?
Yeah, that's kind of the thing, is like, if they have a good martial one turn, as long as I'm keeping up my tempo, I usually feel fine. But if my tempo stutters, it's less about what my opponent does, more about what I do. Like, if I stutter any significant amount, that's when I feel it's a pretty bad thing. Now, depending on how big their tempo gain is, that's kind of where it feels kind of really bad. Like, if they marshal like five dudes and they're all decent dudes, that's when I start to feel like that might be a little hard to come over. But for the most part, it's more about just not missing my own tempo. But
all right.
So dudes, I top out at 6. I run 2x copies of New Eddard, Rob, and Blackfish. New Eddard is just, he is superior in a lot of ways. I do like the ability of Old Eddard a little bit more, but the fact that he's 1 gold less is giant. And the extra power,
that's huge.
Yeah, the power is nice, and the 1 extra strength is actually pretty big as well.
Yeah, so he goes down 1 gold and up 1 strength from the core set. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, just like the amount of value that he generates is a little bit more. Like, something that I complained about with the Old Eddard was, like, my opponents would often feel the pressure when I played an Old Eddard, but I wouldn't. Like, I wouldn't feel how powerful the card is. But every single time I drop this Eddard, I'm like, all right, this is a card they have to deal with.
Yeah.
Like, the Old Eddard, they just kind of had to play slightly differently, which hurt them, but I didn't feel it as much.
Well, the thing about the New Eddard that I really, really like is that it gives Stark something that all the other houses have, and that's that rush. I mean, the moment you play with New Eddard, like you're saying, like, you feel it on your side of the board. You're getting 2 power every single challenge. You're getting a better value for the card, and I think that was really important. I mean, in my opinion, he's easily one of the best cards in the box.
Yeah, absolutely.
They don't call him fast Eddie for no reason.
Yeah, he's absolutely one of the best cards in the set.
So my big thing is, like, Corset Eddard felt like a defensive card, mm-hmm. and this feels like an offensive card.
Yeah, that is a very big difference. It's like, the Old Eddard is definitely a defensive card at its core. You wanted to go first still, but going first doesn't necessarily mean you're being aggressive. But yeah, he was definitely just like, he was a really good defensive card. He helped you stave them off. But like I said, a lot of times this deck doesn't really need that. It's not what it's
I agree with your comment about the Old Eddard, that he's just, your opponent just looks at him and is like, God, that guy's a pain in the ass. But you're just sitting there like, I wish I could have marshaled something else.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't really do a whole lot for you other than piss your opponent off.
Yeah.
Which I can totally get behind, but...
oh, yeah, yeah. But you probably run 3 copies of him.
But, you know, I think that this one is much better for the deck that you're building. Arya, obviously you're running the core set Arya.
Yes,
right?
I find there are a few problems I have with the new Arya. The first of which is her condition is a little bit too much. And the second is, like, although the ability is very, very good, it is removal. The only problem is it can't be modified anyway, and her stats plus the ability I do not think are worth 4 gold. Whereas old Arya, she comes with a dupe, which is super useful just by itself. She has stealth and 2 icons. It's just a super good card.
Yeah.
When the Starks, like, you know, actually can utilize the archetype of, like, sacrificing and kill and stuff like that, especially with Crypts coming out, I think the new Arya might have a place, but maybe. I don't know. Stealth. Military power icon.
You're losing 2 cards that turn. Yeah. You're losing the card that died, and then also Arya.
What I'm saying is, like, it may have a spot. I don't necessarily see it myself because I just, there's no reason. Same reason like we were mentioning with New Cat, like with New Catlin in a sack deck. Yeah, you know, it may have its space, but opponent not being able to trigger abilities in a challenge. I mean, that's big. So once again, I mean, they're giving us cards that are going to be helping us in the future kind of thing, not necessarily right now.
And I think the sacrifice theme as a whole is kind of like,
well,
too janky.
We built a couple.
Know.
They just didn't. Yeah, they weren't as good.
Like, you just run out of characters eventually.
I think it really needs Crypts of Winterfell from the next chapter pack.
I don't know what that does.
I actually don't. It allows you when you sacrifice a character. Someone remind me. It's been a
while. I've read the card, and I agree that it facilitates the thing a little bit more. I don't remember what its exact effect is, but I do know that it does help the sack.
Can you guys just
scene?
Give me a brief, like, when you sacrifice it goes to your hand, like, what does it do?
Discard pile.
Yeah, it's still it's the normal sac effect for your character, but it does something to your opponent as well.
Oh, okay.
To compensate you a little bit. The only problem I find with the sac is, like, as hard as Winter is actually a super good card for the sac effect, but the problem is you actually have to have a character in your hand to trigger it, and you have to have the gold as well. So yeah. It's like, if basically in order for the sac theme to be better, Stark just needs better card draw what it needs. Like, it just needs good, efficient card draw in order for that theme to work.
I was listening to, I think it was Beyond the Wall, and they used a term that I've heard it in other settings, but not so much in this game before, but they said, like, the sac theme is kind of like chasing the dragon, where it's just kind of like, you're always going to keep trying it, and you're thinking you're closer and closer, but it's never going to come together. Yeah.
Like a mail deck or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can agree with that. It's probably one of those themes where it's just like, they'll probably print a card every once in a while that's like, here's that sac theme you were looking at. And it's just never going to quite be up to the power of just, like, just generically good cards in a deck instead of, like, this weird theme.
Yeah. All right, so moving on from Arya, there's the Bear Island Loyalist. I don't know if you run any of those, but...
I actually experimented with them a little bit, and then it led me to a couple of conclusions. So the first of which is their ability is inherently defensive, but you cannot use it unless you are attacking. And there are very, very few cards in this game that actually target your dudes while you are attacking.
Yeah, so Jakaris, basically.
Yeah, pretty much just Targaryen has cards that matter with Bear Island Loyalists. So I just found them to be a worse Tumblestone Knight, basically. Like, they're one gold more, but they're loyal, so they're technically the same cost if you use fealty. We'll call it 2.5, so they're a little bit more, but, like, they're cute. I mean, if more cards in the format come to the point where there are events that will target your opponent's dudes while they are attacking, it'll be good.
Yeah.
Currently, it's like Dracarys and then the new Ranger plot. Yeah, or
and like
Ranger
Kraken's
event.
Grasp, I think.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, and no, Kraken's Grasp is on the defense too, so...
Oh, so he would... Yeah, but they couldn't... anyway.
So,
yeah.
I mean, it does say participating. I don't know if it says attack or not, but...
I think it's just participating.
Even still, even if you try and use it defensively, it means you're holding a 2-strength guy back for the defense. When you're attacking with all your good characters, that's when you really want to protect them. You're more defending just to keep them from gaining power. You're not usually trying to win that defense unless you have the liberty to, because you go first a lot. Also, the other thing is Stark just has some good event negation. So, I mean, how many times do I have to stop your events?
Yeah.
Like, it looks really good on paper, but I don't think the game is in a place yet where it's a good card.
All right, so zero Bear Island Loyalists. Fair
zero
enough.
Bear Island Loyalists.
I think you'd run 3 Brands.
I do run 3 Brands.
And 3 Caitlyns.
And 3 Caitlyns, yes.
The 4 cost, not the 7 cost.
Yes, 4 cost, definitely not 7 cost.
And then Direwolf Pups.
Direwolf Pups are currently at 0, okay. Mostly because of the new First Snow of Winter. You just don't want too many targets for that. I find, on average, they're not as good as a Tumblestone Knight. I run Shaggy Dog as kind of a replacement for that.
Yeah,
I have a quick question about Winterfell Pups. So now, we're running a Spring Kit tonight here at Arkham House Games. And for tonight, you're actually going to be running a Wolf-Heavy deck, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So now, in a Wolf-Heavy deck, their value is increased.
Oh, yeah.
2 cost for a 4 or 5 strength character.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not a bad thing, right?
It definitely turns into another target for, like, a Time for Wolves. So, like... In today's tournament, I'm actually just running, like, a kill deck, because although I haven't done enough testing to tell whether or not it's better or worse, I believe is worse than the deck I have laid out for the podcast purpose. But it's just a super fun deck. It's got, like, kill all over it. It's got 3 ice, 3 put to the swords, 2 like warm rains.
It's a fuck your opponent's characters deck.
5 of the 7 plots are 2 claim. So
wow.
It's just, like, a super aggressive deck that's a lot of fun.
Oh, my God.
So, and then, like, one of the cute things you can do is, like, a Time for Wolves. It's like, oh, I've got 5 Direwolves out. I'm going to go search for my 6-strength pup. So, it's just kind of a super cute deck. I don't know that it's, like I said, I don't think it's better than the current deck I have kind of laid out for the podcast, but it is a lot of fun.
Okay.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that. You know, because, I mean, Direwolf pups do have their place in certain types
of
cards.
No, absolutely. You can even run them in this deck if you really wanted to over Tumblestone Knights, because it does run enough Direwolves that they can be on average 3 to 4 strength, but with Shaggy Dog being flat 3 strength for 2 gold, it's just a little more efficient on average for this deck. It also has the benefit of being loyal, so that if I draw unique, so if I draw 2 of it, I can dupe it for the save against first Snow of Winter. So
yeah,
how do you feel about your setups with this though? Because I mean, look, you got Eddards, you got Robs, you got Blackfish, you got Wolves in the North, you got Catelyn. You're not running Tumblestone. You're not running Direwolf pups. So I feel like you got a lot of expensive guys.
Yeah, I do have a lot of cheap guys.
You don't want Arya in setup.
Yeah, you don't want Arya or Summer in setup. But I do have a lot of cheap cards that we haven't really gone over yet either. Yeah. So, for instance, well, I've said it a couple of times, like Shaggy Dog I run 2 of. Hodor I run 2 of. Sansa I run 2 of. Osha I run 2 of.
3 reducers.
3 reducers. So there are a lot of cheap cards in the deck, but we're focusing on the high end just because that's kind of where your power comes from. And Joe was kind of leading me on where we were going with cards.
I'm just going alphabetical because I think it's simplest.
I did not know that. I was not paying that close attention.
Yeah, you know, it's like A, B, C.
Fair enough.
D. On D. We're about to go on to E, which is Eddard, which we already talked about.
Yep, we already talked about Eddard.
So then we can go to G with Greywind. And I think that's a good thing to talk about because we're talking about direwolves. Greywind and Wolves of the North together, I think, is a good thing to talk about.
It is absolutely a good thing to talk about. Unfortunately for Greywind, I think Wolves of the North actually pushes it out a little bit. I actually think Wolves of the North is the best card in this set. I originally, when I looked at it, I'm like, this is just a strong card, and I put it in my deck. And the second I played it, I'm just like, this is the best card in the set. Like, as long as you're going first, it is absolutely, like, it on average is 3-2. So its base strength is 3, but its ability is to, when it bypasses something by stealth, reduce it by the number of direwolves. So even if you only have 2 other direwolves out, it's reducing somebody's strength by 3.
Yeah.
So, like, imagine Tywin being a 4 strength character instead of 6 or 7, right? That's a huge deal. Yeah. It effectively has 3 plus the number of direwolves times however many challenges that character has the potential to participate in.
Yeah.
And if I may interject, one of the things that you actually brought up, Matt, when we were testing this was their synergy with Greywind.
Oh, absolutely.
And I mean, being able to chomp some of the bigger characters down after stealthing twice is nothing to scoff at.
No, absolutely. Their ability to drop a character to 0 is actually really easy. One of their biggest benefits, in my opinion, is they are a non-unique character with stealth, which is absolutely insane. So they're both in the deck, obviously, but Wolves of the North beats out Greywind now as a 3 of, whereas Greywind currently only run 2.
And I still remember on Sunday when I, like, you know, I did the review on Thursday and then I came in Sunday and you were like super offended.
I was.
I gave it a 3 out of 5, but it's obviously a very good deck in this deck. I mean, if you're running them, it's not a good card. It's great because you have other direwolves.
Absolutely.
Joe, we actually all disagree with you about the rating for Wolves of the North.
To be perfectly honest, I don't give a fuck, Mickey.
So I think one of the things that the Wolves of the North review kind of suffered from was a lack of playtesting. Because a lot of their reviews were, I'm not going to say on par, but fairly close to what my initial rating of cards were when I just looked at them. There were a couple of exceptions, such as Wolves of the North and like Rickon Stark, but for the most part, they were
I was about to ask, how far are we away from Arjo?
So for Rickon Stark, every single person in the review gave it a 5 out of 5, and I would give it an easy 1 out of 5.
See,
I think it is one
of
the worst cards.
I already told him this is a disagreement on how you rate cards in theory. We gave it a 5 because it's a 1 cost, it's super easy to include, it has a great effect, and it's set upable with your 7 coster or your 6 coster, and it stops your opponent from doing things. If you're stopping your opponent from doing stuff, it's a good card. They cannot summons on turn 1, they can't get the Daenerys, they can't set up their board, they're fucked. So that's why I gave it a 5. I did not give it a 5 because I think it's a game-changing card.
So calm down, Joe. Okay.
I'm calm.
Whoa.
I'm calm down.
Whoa. So, like, I agree with you on certain points, but where he is right, we do have a different opinion on how to rate cards. One of the reasons why I give Rickon Stark a 1 out of 5 is because although his effect is very, very powerful, it's just this game doesn't have a whole lot of search effects in it that are played and good. Like, for instance, summons, I actually don't care if you summons most of the time. So it's like, I would like to stop it, but am I going to pay 1 gold and a slot in my deck for it? I don't think I do. That's this deck personally. I don't know how other decks feel about that particular interaction. But one of the only cards, I think it's kind of ironic that one of the only cards that I would actually care to use Rick and Stark on is A Time for Wolves. And that's just because it brings the card immediately into play under the right circumstances. So that's just very strong.
Yeah.
One of the only other cards might be Here to Serve, depending on which clan you're playing it out of, obviously.
Against Night's Watch, you want to stop it.
Yeah, against Night's Watch, you want to stop it because this deck likes to kill a certain amount still. It doesn't have like the full suite that my kill deck does, but it does have like two ice. It has Grey Wind. It has stuff that it wants to accomplish. But like, for the most part, the Stark deck just doesn't really care about search. So it's like, go ahead, search. I would think
you would want to stop people from finding events.
Finding like, what?
Events.
Well, that's
Shadow
the thing.
Black Lane.
Yeah.
Shadow Black Lane, you want to stop.
So they're getting house-specific events, which, for the most part, once again, the deck doesn't care about, especially since, like,
unless
I have
Lannister.
First, I have so many ways of stopping events that I usually am like, okay, fine. Play your event to go get a different event. Okay, I'll stop that one instead. So they invested a certain amount to play that card and pay gold for it, and then I'll just stop the card they searched for. Alternatively, there are certain clans that do houses that have really annoying events that I do not want them to search for. But at the same time, what happens if they invest all that time and effort and they don't get one? That does happen. Like I said, it is kind of a difference of opinion. I think later on down the road, when search effects become much more popular and just good, that he will eventually be a card that you want in a deck. But just right now, with the way Stark plays and how it works, I just don't personally care that much about your search abilities.
Fair enough. You mentioned before Hodor, which is H.
Yep, Hodor.
Two of them.
Yeah, he's just a tour. He's not particularly good, but he's not bad. He's a two-cost loyal guy, so he's usually one gold or zero. So he's just a really efficient stat guy. He's also a prime candidate for, like, March to the Wall, Claim, and other things like that, because he doesn't contribute to dominance and you can't attack. So
you would just use Hodor for Claim. You monster.
Yeah, I am. It's true. I am a very evil person.
I'm sorry. Okay.
Well, before we run out of time, locations. Let's talk about what locations you run.
Yeah, absolutely. So I run 3 Hearttree Groves, 3 King's Roads, and 3 Rose Roads. Just your standard like economy suite, and then 2 Gates of Winterfell.
Yeah.
Only 2 because it's not that it's kind of expensive, but it kind of is. It's also just sometimes it kind of kicks you when you're like, oh, I only have like 8 neutral cards in my deck, and you're like, oh, I just flipped a neutral card. So you now know I have, you know, this card for next turn, and I don't draw it. So. But it is a very good card. I still have 2 of it.
It's one of our cheapest draw locations in the game.
Yeah, it is one of the cheapest, so it's pretty good for that. And I'll just go ahead and rattle through the rest of my list pretty quickly, just because if we're running out of time. I run 2 Osha, just because she's a relatively cheap dude. Her ability is just amazing.
Her ability is, yeah. She's a reprint. She was great in 1.0.
Like, just the ability to mess with your opponent's math is amazing. So, like, especially like on a turn when I'm like, Wardens of the North, and I'm like, I will do a single attack with Osha. And then it's like, how much do you commit to that? Because I can just back out of that challenge completely, or I can add infinite strength to it. So it's like, she's just super good. I love her icons as well. It just makes her super diverse. I can include her on the military challenge and be like, nope, I want her for the intrigue challenge because you didn't defend the military challenge with enough.
Yeah.
So it's just
I think she could actually help make Lord of the Crossing work for Stark too.
She could. She is absolutely one of the engines that could make Lord of the Crossing a viable deck for Stark. I don't like it with the way I play the game, just because it makes you change the way you do challenges so much. But she is definitely a tool you could use to make that deck viable, because she has 2 icons and you can use her on a challenge and then just back out of that challenge, but it will still count for you having initiated that challenge type.
Yeah.
So you effectively can make 1 less challenge than is actually required. So it's super nice for that.
Exactly. So just to continue running through it, you know, you have 2 Sansas, you said.
Yep, I still have 2 Sansa. I run old Sansa personally because I find that old Sansa at worst is a power per turn. New Sansa at worst is a character that draws me a card sometimes, which is less good than a power per turn.
Yeah.
Like, Old Sansa kind of puts them on a clock, or at least keeps you up with theirs. New Sansa is a card that is really, really good when you have no dead guys. If you have any dead guys, though, she immediately starts dropping down.
Until you have four dead guys, and then she becomes good again.
I would say marginally less bad.
I think Insight's nice.
So I think when you have one dead guy, she's still fine. She's still a two-cost character with three strength and two icons. When two guys are dead, she's basically a different Tumblestone Knight.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah. When three guys are dead, she's at that point basically just bad. When you have four guys dead, that's when she is bad, quote. Like, she's got
she's
insight.
A win more card at that point.
Well, she's got insight, but the problem with having insight is she can't make the challenge by herself.
She's a tag along buddy.
Exactly.
She and, hangs out with her mom.
Well, that's what Starks do. They tag along, right? They have a location that you tag along.
But,
they have a Baron Loyalist for tagging
but
along.
The funny thing is, like, if she attacks with somebody else and you have Winterfell Castle out, then she loses her insight again, right?
Yeah. So, actually, if you just have. You mean the plus two to each unique? Yeah. I mean, not if you have six dudes dead.
Yeah, if you have six dudes
exactly.
dead.
Exactly.
You're like, dang, it's like, I found out. I have to kill six of my guys.
She doesn't even really combo with Lady very well, like Old Sansa.
No, exactly. Yeah. And Lady combos really well with Old Sansa. Well, like, Lady facilitates Old Sansa. Like, Old Sansa is obviously a very big tempo hit if you play her outside of setup. But Lady really fixes that in a big
she's
way.
She's a moderate tempo hit. I don't mind paying three gold for
yeah,
power.
Yeah, no, I don't mind her either. But there are turns where I'm just like, I want to play Sansa, but I can't take that hit right now. Yeah. So, like, Lady really helps that a lot. So there is that kind of interaction that's pretty important.
Yeah.
Then I play three Winterfell Stewards just because they're easy to sacrifice. They're easy for kill for, like, Grey Wind to activate Rob. They're good for favor, falling out of favor, stuff like that.
Yeah, two Summer.
I run two Summer because she's just a great utility card for both Wildfire Assault and for Snow of Winter. Like, if I have to discard a bunch of guys, I don't have to feel as bad about discarding other things. It facilitates sacrificing or killing a low-strength character without caring. Like, oh no, I have to take a claim. I'll just take Osha. Next turn, I will play Summer, get Osha back, play her again. So she's just a super efficient card. The insight on Bran is kind of the same as the insight on new Sansa when she's zero. I play two Needle. We kind of discussed that earlier. It's for the two. It's cheap two strength on attachments, which is really good. It has the added benefit that it can save your sacrifice dudes if you need to.
Yeah, if you use it on, you can put on Bran and then get two cancels out of it. And
yeah,
it's not bad.
So I play two Ladies because it's just a super good card. Now that we've got a good fetch for it, I don't feel the need to run three. Its terminal is the only reason I run two of it. I run two Nymeria. Nymeria is also in the running, in my opinion, for the one of the best cards in the set. Just in being able to intimidate twice to three times per turn if you've got, like, Grey Wind and Nymeria is huge. Yeah. It's like, even if you don't have Grey Wind out, like, for Wolves of the North, you're like, I'll attack with Wolves of the North. And then I will attack with, like, my Rob or Catelyn and kneel out that guy that I Wolves of the North. So, yeah. Like, you can't even use his abilities or anything like that.
Yeah, and Nymeria also, I mean, intimidate's one of the, I think it's the rarest keyword in the game right now.
Yeah.
It's only, like, only
Wait,
King Rob
pillage?
And...
Wait, maybe?
No, there's lots of pillage.
There's actually
a lot of pillage now.
I wouldn't say a lot. I would say...
There's, like, the Targaryen army. Four. There's the, yeah. the drowned guys.
Oh, there's
guys.
A Targaryen army that has pillage?
Yeah, the newest
mountain,
seven.
I mean, there's like, plenty of
there are cards with pillage. Pillage is a more renowned keyword. So far, the only intimidates I can think of off the top of my head are Grey Wind and... Robert Baratheon. I'm sure there's more than that,
well,
but I
Dawn,
can't.
But
yeah, Dawn.
Okay, Dawn.
Dawn
on gives
House
it
Day
up.
Knight.
So, like, Dawn is like a Nymeria that doesn't move. It gives them strength, but Nymeria
and it only
moves,
works with Dane.
Plus,
characters.
The Nymeria card is just, like, so cute.
It's a very cute card.
It's fucking adorable.
So, like I said very early on when I did my Wolves of the North, or a Time for Wolves spiel, I said very often, if I start a unique Stark character that can play Nymeria on them, if it's probably good enough that that's my first plot of the game, just okay. Because Nymeria is that good. She is very, very solid.
So then you have two Ladies, two Nymeria.
Two Nymeria.
Two Ice.
Two Ice, yep.
Are you running any Milks or anything like that?
Nope, I do not run Milks. I have not run Milks in this deck since Corset, actually.
You're like, I'd rather just kill them.
Exactly. It's like, if my objective is to kill them, milking them isn't helping me accomplish that in most cases.
Yeah.
There are niche cases where milking them would help, but at the same time, just killing them is better.
Yeah.
And then I think the last card that we haven't talked about is I run two tiers of lease.
Well, we haven't. What about the Pack Survives?
Yeah, I was going to mention
Survives,
that.
Yeah. I actually run Pack Survives over Hand's Judgment.
I don't see why you wouldn't.
Yeah, exactly.
It's better in almost every way.
Yeah, there are very, very few cases where it's not better. But the fact that it sacrifices a Direwolf card is amazing because you, in the niche case where Nymeria or Lady are on the table and no other Direwolves are and you can't kneel anybody, you can sacrifice them, which is not nearly as big a hit as, like, sacrificing a real Direwolf.
Yeah, it would suck to lose a Lady, but she is just one gold. It's not a huge hit.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, you know, on demand, so it's not like you have to hold back a gold every single turn when you
have a Hand's Judgment. Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. Like I said in the beginning, a lot of this deck is, like, using its tempo, and part of that is paying as much gold a turn as it can on dudes and events and things like that, so very, very rarely does it have enough gold to stop anything that's more than maybe one. So, like, a Pack Survives just fills that in nicely. Like, I could sacrifice my Shaggy Dog to stop whatever you're going to do, and then I could pay two gold for a new Shaggy Dog. Like, yeah, it's not that big a deal.
And then you have, let's just finish out the events. You have three of the Pack Survives, two tiers of lists.
And
lease.
And three winners coming. And that's all the events I run. It's a pretty event low deck. I don't know what other decks are on average, but it feels low to me just from other card game experiences.
I think eight events is about right.
Okay.
Because, you know, you can't have too many non-setupable cards.
And the tiers of lease are just kind of like a surprise factor.
You didn't think I was running this, did
you? The only intrigue icons I run are Sansa, Osha, and Catelyn. But one of the cute interactions with Catelyn is you can't Hand Judgment my Tears of Lease. So, like, if I attack you with Catelyn on an intrigue challenge and you don't defend, I'm probably going to kill one of your best characters that doesn't have an intrigue icon.
So,
like,
I'm kind of looking over your lines. Do you run Winterfell Kennelmaster?
I do not in this current version, mostly because when you saturate too much with two cost characters, like, the deck I was running before this was, like, it had pups, it had Kennel Masters, it was just a really good fill-out-the-board deck because it played the strategy I like very, very well. Mm-hmm. But the turn that you played First Snow of Winter, I just lost the game because it picked up, like, eight cards. And then I'm like, okay, well, now I have to discard almost all of these.
Yeah.
Whereas they kind of got replaced with just more high-end cards, like Jory. Actually, I don't think we talked about Jory, so we'll talk about him in a second. Jory, Wolves of the North, stuff
left.
Like that. Yeah, I know.
That spring tournament's calling our name.
Yeah, so Jory is just a super good card. He's four costs. I only run two of him because he is a little bit on the low stat end for his cost. But his ability is absolutely amazing. Just having a bodyguard on a body is really good.
I want to bring up something real quick with him. This is the last thing I want to say. I believe, and I have to confirm this, I'll double check it, but I believe if they have a two-claim plot, you can choose him and another character and then sacrifice him to save the other character.
That would make sense to me as far as the timing, the way I understand the timing. I haven't done any testing, but I haven't had a two-plot claim resolved against me in a very long time, yeah. So I'm not sure.
And he might even be able to, if you, a regular claim, you could use him and then sacrifice himself to save himself. I don't know. That's not.
Yeah,
that's,
I mean,
that's pure.
That doesn't make any sense at all.
I don't know if I could do it,
it
but it'd be funny if you could.
It doesn't make sense, but mechanically, it seems like it could work.
Because
he's not dead
yet.
Yeah,
and then you sacrifice him to save
the
character that would
die. Just a niche situation where you don't have any other unique characters to target, and you don't want to worry about treachery, things like that. And all it does is put him in your discard pile instead of your dead pile.
But you could play another one.
So, exactly. So.
With that, we have our people coming over and telling us to get out of here. So,
that was Matt
talking
the Stark with the loudest bark of all House right, Ully, because his name has one less T than it's supposed to.
Oh my God!
Any final words, Mike?
No. Overall, I like what they're doing with Direwolf Synergy in 2.0. In 1.0, it really kind of wasn't there. It was like a mechanic they tried and then gave up on. Mm. And, you know, it's nice to see some, I mean, even just like Warm Rain is nice to see, but all these new things are nice as well.
Yeah.
Joe, any last words, shout outs?
We'll post this deck list, along with the podcast. whenever we get
around. We'll also let people know how it did in our tourney we're running.
Yeah. Well, except I'm not running that list. I'm not running this list. I'm running Murder Wolf Stark. Unless you want to post that one as well. I
don't
can
tell them that. You're ruining the ambiance of this podcast.
We'll see how well you do. we'll see what happens. We'll post something.
Like I said, I don't think that the Wolf deck is as good as this. But
then why are you running it?
Because it's a lot of fun.
Same reason I run Night's Watch, because you enjoy it.
Final thoughts, Matt?
Final thoughts. I like a lot of the new Stark cards. I think some of them suffer from just being not as good as their counterparts. And other ones, such as like Wolves of the North, Nymeria, Blackfish, are just super solid cards that kind of help you round out. And if you notice, I'm not playing very many three ofs in characters anymore, except for just ones that are exceptionally strong or I need their ability. So it kind of gives you the diversity where like you can kill some characters that are unique and not feel as bad about it.
Yeah.
And I just got one last thing to say. I usually end the show with a fact, but now I'm going to do a tribute. Before I say anything, though, we did get some people asking about warning about spoilers for a series of books that's over a decade old and a show that's only five years old.
They should have read it by now. They can't complain about spoilers.
Insult people that listen to our podcast.
This is from book one, so hopefully everyone knows it. But I'm doing, in the theme of the show, it's tribute to the lady. The card that still puts a quiver in Mickey's heart whenever he sees it.
He is so weird about that card.
Yeah, it's just a real shame the way she had to go. If everyone's familiar, Nymeria attacked Joffrey, but they let Nymeria run away. So Cersei demanded another direwolf be sacrificed in her place, and that was a good old lady. And it's just a real shame that Lady had to go that way. If only Cersei had a better sense of humor.
Oh my god.
Just push the stop button right now.
Stop
We're
it.
Done.
Until next time.
Talk to you guys later.